It's The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. The numbers may not tell the story. That's something we often get reminded of on this program. The numbers tell only a general story. The destruction of Katrina, the rebuilding of New Orleans, the growth of China as it struggles to make a credible government. In the case of New Orleans, the numbers tell a story of a general rebound in a city that takes bad news in stride. In China, the story is growth that overwhelms everything and is transforming a nation virtually overnight. New Orleans has music, and there the story told is human, it's universal, and where the numbers just keep time. Later this hour, musician John Cleary holding on to the music when all is lost. In the case of China, though, the country has cash and credit and a willing world looking to lend money and invest in China. By the numbers, it's a miracle. But the miracle only works in a world flush with cash and credit and a Chinese political system that can grant freedom as easily as it writes checks. Author Will Hutton sounded a warning in his book last decade, The Writing on the Wall, China and the West in the 21st Century. China can't just float on the oceans of cash and credit in a booming world without significant political reform, he says. Now, high levels of poorly made exports, little homegrown technical innovation, a demanding and rising middle class, and the near absence of traditional rule of law that permits resources to be siphoned off in vast corruption schemes threatens everything in China right now. China's currency woes, worker unrest, slowing investment. This week, it reached a head with the devaluation of the Chinese yuan twice. Author Will Hutton, relying on some explosive metaphors, says he can't help but believe his predictions may be coming true.
There's two worries. One is a technical worry about the pace of economic growth, the fact that exports have slowed down, which has always been a major engine of Chinese growth. But beneath that, there's a deeper worry, which is that the Chinese leadership is kind of publicly acknowledging what it privately knows, which is that the Chinese economy is profoundly dysfunctional and getting into deeper and deeper trouble on multiple levels.
And let's talk about some of those levels. I mean, if we can liken cash to water and liken demand in the rising middle class in China to a thirst, is there enough cash in the world to deal with the demands of this growing middle class in China and the political instability if those demands are not met?
That's one way of putting the opposing the question. And that presupposes that the economy is going to carry on growing. But actually, if you look at the underlying numbers, investment, private investment, insofar as there is such a thing as private investment, because everything in China is degrees of governmental. But actually, the big corporations and the so-called Chinese private sector, business investment is actually flat year on year. And that is the first time that's happened ever since the reform program began in the late 1970s. And public investment is not growing very much either. So, you know, what sits behind your question is that the engine that has produced this growing Chinese middle class is carrying on uninterruptedly into the future. And that's what I would challenge. I don't think that the Chinese economic model, as it's been organized for the last generation, great dependence on export growth, great dependence on investment, keeping consumption growing at a much, much lower rate, is sustainable anymore. Over and above that, you have deep, deep set corruption. Over and above that, you have a financial system, as the recent collapse in the stock market showed, that is incredibly fragile. This is a volcano preparing to blow. No one can tell where that's going to happen in the next kind of 3 months or 3 years, but you can see the storm warnings of that happening.
And if we're going to look at this as a tripod, to use another tortured analogy, the leg of exports is weak and declining. The leg of investment, as you've just said, is flat and in a very, very precarious position right there. And the leg of consumption is also threatened by all of the things you've described, including corruption. I mean, are we closer than we think to this blowing of the volcano?
I mean, I wrote my book on this subject kind of some years back, around 2007, 2008. And what I thought was at the time that actually in the second half of the 2010s, that the Chinese economy would blow because the kind of inconsistencies and contradictions in it were just kind of not sustainable. You couldn't have exports carrying on growing at 25 to 30% per annum, because ultimately Chinese exports would swamp the planet. It was a completely impossible proposition. Nor could you carry on investing at these gargantuanly high rates where more than two-fifths of GDP was being consecrated to investment. I mean, roads going nowhere, railways going nowhere, viaducts carrying nobody over nothing. I mean, this was what was happening in China. And you can only get consumption up. And this is really important point for your kind of listeners to get hold of. You can only get consumption up if you allow people property rights, if you allow people the freedom to borrow in the way that you can do in the United States and in Western Europe. You can't do that in China for one enormously important reason. It actually enfranchises economically the middle class and would lead direct to a political challenge to the one-party system. And this kind of conundrum has been at the heart of Chinese politics, has been at the heart of the concerns of the Chinese leadership for more than a decade, and you can now start to see it surfacing.
Are we looking at a situation where if consumption stalls, corporations that are looking for investments and can't find them in China are going to send their capital outside of China, and that the government's going to have that to deal with? And I'm wondering if the monetary policy in Europe and the United States, this whole quantitative easing business, is dependent on a lot of assumptions in China that look really suspect right now.
Completely correct. There's lots and lots of bits of the world economy that are held together by kind of gossamer thin threads. And one of those gossamer thin threads is the Chinese economy carries on growing. The Chinese economy carries on sucking in imports. I mean, you can already see in kind of what's happened to raw material prices around the world, you know, the slowdown of the Chinese economy, the impact it's having on commodity prices, you know. And as for capital flows, I mean, to tell the truth, no one really, you know, understands the complexity and interactions of these. But broadly speaking, the United States has needed China to hold its debt. And China has only been able to manage to do that because it's been a public holder of America's debt. Private citizens and private corporations in China have very, very limited capacity to get their money out of China. This whole system is enormously vulnerable. I mean, if the Chinese were to relax capital controls more than they have, the renminbi would fall even further quickly, because people would ship their money out of this highly precarious, politically unstable place. Where would they ship it to? The United States. What would happen to the dollar? It would go up. What would happen to domestic American politics the night of the presidential elections? A lot of incredible pressure, particularly, well, from both Republicans and Democrats, because this would mean, you know, blue-collar America under even more pressure. So, you know, this is dangerous, dangerous times we're living through.
So you look out your window, you see the smoke rising over a mountain, you know a volcano has erupted. What are the signs here? The dollar spikes upward, interest rates begin to change erratically, and a company like Boeing gets, $3 billion, $4 billion worth of orders canceled suddenly from China of airplanes.
All that you have described, I mean, it's not, I mean, lava isn't flowing from this volcano yet, but you can see actually the kind of first tremors, and you can see to stretch this to another tortured analogy, smoke puffing out of the top of the cone of it. I mean, you can see where the pressure points are coming. The red back, the renminbi, is going to fall in value. The green back, the dollar, is going to rise in value. That may defer some of the interest rate increases that the Fed has been talking about. But actually, the bigger impact will be on kind of cheap imports from China, once again putting pressure on blue-collar America. And actually, as you've described, some key orders from China that they've been deploying to compensate the United States for this trade deficit you run with China. Some of those may be canceled or not come through. And all of that is going to make the kind of politics between these two gigantic supercontinental superpowers begin to get very toxic.
All right. Who thinks you're nuts as you describe this scenario that's causing the hairs on the back of my neck to stand up?
Look, even the people who are kind of China optimists, you know, understand the points I make. They've always thought that the party was clever enough to kind of manage its way through these issues. I don't think anybody on earth is clever enough to manage their way through the kind of issues that China has currently got. All I can say is this. We have to watch this like a hawk. We have to handle it with great care. We have to understand the political arguments in China. And one thing that we must not do is to kind of to believe anyone who thinks that this economy is as strong as that of the United States. Its financial system is far weaker than the American financial system was in the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis. Arguably, it's in the same kind of order of weakness as in 1929. There are enormous kind of loans by the banks out to people who've been speculating on the stock market. There's enormous bad debts to municipal authorities. There's enormous bad debts to small and medium-sized business who've been given loans on political and not commercial criteria for decades. All this threatens to unravel in the years ahead, and everybody should be aware of that.
William Hutton is author of The Writing on the Wall, China and the West in the 21st Century. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.